Blog Talk Radio.
I share a regrettable connection to today's radio guest, and no mother wants to experience what we have both experienced. We have lost a child. Different circumstances, but the same pain. Both were twins. My 17-year-old son died in a single car crash in 1997 and left behind a twin sister and an older sister. Angela Brown Ware's 9-year-old son, Eric, died from a brain tumor and left behind a twin brother and an older brother. Different circumstances, yet the same pain. And in Angela's case, she harnessed that pain into worthwhile endeavors. First, a thriving cookie business called Dojangles that landed her and her son, Aaron, on the Oprah show. Now she's written a remarkable new book called One Day We'll Dance Again, in tribute to the life and the death of her remarkably brave son. Christmas is the season for celebrating and remembering. We'll talk to Angela about how she, her husband, and surviving sons cope with the holidays by bringing joy into the hearts and of others through the family business and now her new book. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. I hope you're doing well. Yes, we do have snow here in Boston, not too much where I'm living, but certainly in the heart of Boston, west and north of the city, they have a lot of snow. So winter is definitely here, even though it officially arrives next week. But we're excited because the little kids will have snow for Christmas. So if you are family members and you have little children, I have grandchildren, they will love the fact if you're in the northeast area, they'll have a lot of snow. If you're in a nice sunny place, we are envious. So we hope that you are getting ready for the holiday spirit. Christmas is next week. Hanukkah has already passed. Kwanzaa starts next week as well. Lots of holidays going on here, and we hope and we wish that you will have a wonderful season. I'm excited because I have a very wonderful guest who has taken a lot of her pain and suffering, most recently over the last couple of years, and turned it into a wonderful business and now a brand new book. And we're talking to Angela Brown Ware. We have, as I said in my setup, we have similarities, three children, one passed away, one of them a twin, different circumstances, different ages, but still doing something meaningful with our lives in memory of our sons. I actually wear an angel pin in memory of my son everywhere I go. So you know me, my angel pin. I also journal quite a bit as a result of his death. But I want to turn my attention to Angela and just ask her the first question. We're into the holiday season. People are out there shopping like mad, buying things for next week. But yet, both of us have this thing that we have to carry around because we know that our family, one of our family members, is no longer here on earth. How do you handle the holiday season, and what kind of advice can you share with others who, for the first time this year, are experiencing that Christmas or that holiday without a child? Angela, welcome to the show, and how would you handle that?
It's my pleasure, Carol. I'm glad to be here. I think handling the holidays when you have a child that's no longer with you is a very private, very individual decision, and it can change from year to year. We do set up the tree. We put up all the stockings, even Eric's. You know, some people like to put a present under the tree or give presents in the child's name. It's always different. This year is different for us because my oldest son is away in boot camp for the Marines, so it'll just be the three of us. Yeah, he's graduating in January. He is 17. He's 18.
17.
And
okay.
he will graduate in January, and he's missing Christmas, Thanksgiving, and his birthday. So it's really tough for us right now. So it'll just be the three of us. And we decided to, you need to talk these things out. We decided to put the tree up, and the tree's up. All the decorations are on it. And we just send a lot of notes to Bryce and he's sorely missed, especially mm-hmm. since Eric's not here also. But mm-hmm. you take it the way you can. If you can't go out mm-hmm. and do that shopping, don't do it. I choose not mm-hmm. to. The most mm-hmm. I do is maybe order online, and I try mm-hmm. to make sure I give special attention to Aaron just so he knows that things can get better, and they do get better. It's just some days right. it's good, some days it's not so good, and you know that.
Right, right. Now tell us, take us back for some of our listeners who are listening live or who will be downloading this show after the fact. Walk us back in time in terms of what happened with Eric and the circumstances that led to his passing.
Eric was diagnosed at the age of 6 with astrocytomas of the brainstem. And initially they were benign. They were non-malignant. And he had several surgeries, he had radiation treatments, he had chemo, and almost all of it was gone, and he was in a remission, which we didn't realize was remission. And 2 years later, he became sick again, and this time the astrocytomas were malignant. And he died shortly after they were discovered back in 2006. And he died at the age of 9. But we were blessed to have 3 extra years with him because this mm-hmm. is a fast-moving type of cancer, and he hung on for 3 years. So we're very happy to have that. It took a while to realize that we had been blessed with 3 extra years, but you have to find some of the positive, and that's something that we really appreciate.
Right. And in 7 years, not only do you have obviously his life and his memory to ponder about here during the holiday season, but tell us what you've done in tribute to his life with your business, and then we'll talk about your book. Tell us about the business first.
The business is called Sweets by Aaron Dojangles, and Aaron came up with the business. It was part of a therapy for him to get through the grief of losing his twin brother, and he was an identical twin. It was very difficult. We just started baking in the beginning and giving away treats, and we realized if we wanted to continue to bake and give away treats, we had to start selling them. So we set up the company. Aaron came up with the name, and it went from there. We had a lot of help from people who were willing to give their time and energy to dealing with the legal issues of setting up a company and labels and publicity, website, all kinds of things. So we had a lot of help getting started, and it was very successful. So word went out, and he had an article in the Washington Post, and it was picked up by Oprah, as you said, and it was also picked up by Paula Deen and Katie Couric. So right. he had a whirlwind 2 years of travel and interviews that he was able to use to his advantage, and he really enjoyed it.
That's great. That's great. How is the business doing now, and anything new on the horizon with Dojangles? I love the name. Tell us about the name. How did that name come about?
Aaron came up with the name. Aaron came up with the name. We were coming home from the doctor's office, and the doctor, Dr. Marilyn Corder, his pediatrician, was the one who gave him the idea of starting the company, to start baking and start a company. And on the way home was the first time I'd seen him laugh or smile in months. And he just kept playing with different names, trying to incorporate Eric and Aaron into a name. And finally he says, "I got it." I said, What do you have? He says, "Dojangles." I said, What did you say? He said, "Dough Jangles." I said, "That's perfect." And from there it went.
That's amazing. You know, I saw the episode on Oprah. This was a couple of years ago when the business was just getting started, and one of his idols was Paula Deen. That's why I have real mixed reactions now about Paula Deen, and you know, she's gotten in trouble with the N-word, and she's lost endorsements and just all that kind of stuff, and I feel badly because I remember how joyous he was when he was so surprised that she came and surprised him on the Oprah show. That I'm sure he probably thinks about that from time to time.
Yes, indeed. That was so wonderful. She surprised everybody. She flew in specifically for that moment and flew right back out. But when she heard that she was his favorite, she made a point of coming out for the show.
Wow. Yeah, well, you know, I hope that I'm sure that you'll be able to recoup going forward, but that was a very special moment. Now, tell us about your book. And you've been writing for, 20-plus odd years, so you're not new to writing, but this must have been quite a cathartic experience for you.
This was not my first writing endeavor, but it is my first publishing. I began writing when the children were young, mostly because the stories I would tell my friends and family, they didn't believe about what the things that the children had done or said. So I started keeping a record of it, and then it turned into a book. When Eric died, I incorporated it, his life, into the book, and I realized that it was an entire book all in itself. And that's how we got to this point. And even though I'd started on the first book, this was seemed to be more important, more urgent to get out. So that's why we went with the One Day We'll Dance Again, and my other stuff will come out later.
So this is the first probably of many books, and I understand.
I hope
that.
So.
I wrote personal empowerment first because I needed to share my story about my Mikey, so I do understand that. But it's such a touching book. It's so well written, and
Thank you.
Just feel like you're living the experience that you have gone through just with, first of all, being strong for your son. You have a passage in there that talks about your son coming to your bed, and you know, he's asking the question, Mom, am I dying? And then you've got to somehow answer that question in a way where you don't fall apart, but you answer it as truthfully and as lovingly as possible. Can you share with us those kind of segments in the book that, you know, were probably tough to write but important to write because it shared the story that you wanted to convey?
It was very difficult to write. I tell people that I soaked down two keyboards typing this. Having those type of experiences, it's very difficult to convey the power of those conversations that I had with him. In those times, I would usually pause and say a small prayer that whatever I had to say would come out correctly so that he would understand it and not give him too much information. But he had asked me that question on several occasions. And the answer to that question changed each time from your daddy and I are doing everything we can not make this happen to we're not sure what's going to happen. We have to see what's going to happen. And then finally, when we all realized what was happening, yes, indeed you are. And I think that was good for both of us because he realized that his mommy was telling him the truth and because he already knew it, but he wanted his mom to say it. And I think saying it made it more real, and I think it took a lot of pressure off of him, and it just put everything out in the open.
Right. How has your husband handled this? I know women, you know, we cry, we express ourselves. You're doing it in writing. We have other ways. We have our sister girlfriends that we could go to. For men, it can be very difficult and isolating. So how has it been for, I believe your husband's name is Byron.
Yes. We call him Jeff.
Yes.
He's the typical, I think, the typical version of Venus and Mars where the woman wants to go and talk to her girlfriends and get a sounding board. And men are more into themselves, and they're not very good at sharing their experiences. One thing that we had a problem with is people would ask him how Eric is doing, and he would always say fine, up until the last night. And I'm having to explain to people, but I already spoke to your husband. He said everything was fine. No, everything wasn't fine. So you got to keep the communication open in the family, and you got to keep the communication open with the people who are trying to help you.
Yeah, that's a show in and of itself, the ways that people grieve, the ways people communicate, and they're different often between men and women. I want to tell us how people can purchase your book, because I feel it's a wonderful present that people can give to those, you know, who either have experienced this or who want to just really understand and get to know your family and get to know Aaron. How can people get your book?
There are several ways to get the book. The first is the website itself. It is www.danceagain.info, and that's danceagain, one word, and info, not com. If you're a member of Amazon or Barnes & Noble, you can also get it on there. It's also available, the code for your e-reader. We have those also, and you just have to request the e-reader if you go online.
Great. And what about your cookie business? I went online today, and I got hungry just looking at all those wonderful cookies.
So there's been so much going on that I haven't even put up the Christmas cookies yet. But the website for the cookies is dojangles.com, www.dojangles.com.
Great. Well, I know you have. I was introduced to you by a wonderful woman who's actually listening on the line, and I'm going to give her the heads up because I'm going to unmute her, and I want her to just share her thoughts. Beverly Munn, Joanne Fagan, dear, dear friends, and they're literally launching a nationwide campaign to help sell your books and doing a great job, and I just want to connect the two of you. So, Beverly, I have unmuted you. Hello, welcome to the show. And I know that you have some special thoughts for Angela.
Hello, Beverly.
Hi, Beverly. Are you listening? I know she's listening. I know she's on the air. She may be busy doing something.
Oh, okay.
So we'll just leave her phone open for a little bit. But tell us again, how was the writing process for you in terms of organizing the book, making sure that all the chapters flowed the right way? I'm sure that you probably had a rush of thoughts and suggestions and ideas. How was that process for you?
That was a very challenging process. The book began because I had kept notes during Eric's treatment, and I kept these in little date books so that I'd be able to tell the doctors what was going on. From there, after Eric passed, I wrote letters to him, and I went back and used those letters as a reference to keep my thoughts in order. But if you read the book, you see that when things are happening like that, nothing's in order. And it was talking to people to remember various things, going through the notes, going through the letters, and actually publishing the letters. And that was a very difficult decision because these were my notes to my sweetheart. And it was a challenge to decide whether or not to share them with other people. But when you realize that other people are going through this also, they need to know that they're not alone, that their feelings aren't unusual. Anger and sorrow and disappointment and all that is all normal. And I think that I put my heart out when I wrote this book. And the most cathartic time for me was when I got the email saying that the book had been published. And I felt such a relief because if that book was only for our family, I got it all on paper and got it off my heart.
Right, right. Right. And that's
so it was a long journey.
Yeah, I think about obviously every family has something. They have something that they're facing or they're dealing with, that they will be dealing with, and we all have stories. But the beauty of being able to capture those stories, the circumstances, the emotions that you have on paper, and then in your case, and certainly in mine and others, to actually publish that is then an announcement to your loved one that, you know, you will never be forgotten because this book documents your life and what you mean to us, and that you're also willing to share the experience with other people, too. Have you had other women to come up and say, I'm so glad you wrote this book because XYZ happened to me? How has that been for you now that the book has been published?
I have had people to approach me, and it doesn't always have to be a child. They can relate to it with other family members, mothers, cousins, that kind of thing. And the whole process, I think one thing that's unusual about the book is that in the end I give suggestions on how to help a family member or a friend who's going through some of these things because there are things that happen, there are certain circumstances, and the person, the caregiver, the family doesn't always make public their needs. But, you know, if you have a two-income family with two cars, a house, and, you know, all that other stuff, and now they have one person staying home with this child, things are not going to be great. And there are things that happen. You need help with things. You need somebody to check the mail sometimes. You need somebody to run and get some groceries, pick up a prescription. That was one of the hardest things for me was to leave the house to go get a prescription. And the store was only 10 minutes away, but it was just so gut-wrenching to leave him just for that little small amount of time. And there's so many little things that friends and family can do to make their presence known. You just want to know that you're not alone in this journey. And this is when you really find out who your friends are.
Right, right, right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Tell me, Angela Brown-Ware, how do you – I wrote an article about this after my son died because so often people would say, oh, I understand. And for me, unless you have lost a child, regardless of the circumstances, or children, you don't understand. It is not like your mother, your father, who I've both lost, other siblings, other relatives, aunts, uncles that I've lost. This is so different than those losses, and it stays with you in a very different way. That the whole piece about, yes, I understand, is, I think, totally an inappropriate thing to say, and people say it because they're trying to help out. They're trying to reach out and show some compassion to you. But how would you instruct those who have not lost a child to respond to someone who has lost a child? Angela.
Well, I'm going to be very frank with you, Carol. I think the phrase, I know how you feel, if you haven't gone through this, is an insult. It really is.
Correct.
Because you cannot, like you said, you cannot compare the death of your mother to the death of a 9-year-old, a 17-year-old. They haven't had their life. They haven't had their family. We won't get grandchildren from Eric. We won't see him graduate from high school. We won't see him get married. These other people have been able to do. And we won't ever see that. And you really can't compare the death of a child to anything else. There's just no comparison, and the heartache, the pain, the guilt, it's just not the same.
What words should someone use in lieu of "I know how you feel" or "I understand"?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry this happened to you and your family. I'm sorry this happened to Eric. Just I'm sorry. Let me help you. Those are things that make the most difference. You don't have to empathize. We understand that you're affected just as well. Just be there and sometimes not saying anything. I had a house full of women from my church, and they didn't have to say a word. They didn't have to say a word to me. They spoke among themselves. The fact that they were there was enough for me.
Right.
Now, they did a lot. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, I understand.
But just being there was enough. And I knew they saw what was happening. And sometimes I'm sorry is enough.
You know, I, others who have experienced this, need to put pen to paper to, and I've done it in the chapter in a previous book that I wrote called Sisters Together, that was actually published and written by Deborah Gould and Nancy Lewis, friends of mine. But I think we need to be reminded, we need to remind others about appropriate language to use in the death, in this case specifically of a child, because what happens, either people may say something that is inappropriate or insulting, or they don't say anything at all, and they stay away because they don't know what to say. So it really is up to us to help bridge that gap with those, and you certainly have done it in your wonderful book, and you know, other ways that we can communicate that kind of message where we want your love, we share your sympathies, we just want you to communicate it appropriately.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I think it's sad also. I'll share this quick experience with you. I reached out to the grandmother of one of the young children who died last year with the Sandy Hook Elementary School experience. And I, had been able, through our missionary work, to get her home address, and I decided that I wanted to do a card shower with her. And this, again, is an idea that I got from Beverly Munn. And so we had people that were sending her cards, and she was furious with me that she didn't want – she was obviously in such grief. She was furious with me, so I had to do a couple of things to dismantle that whole campaign. And also she didn't want her grandson's picture on my website. So there's some people where they go to that extreme, where they don't want any outside contact based on the tragedy that they've suffered. And that's very hard to deal with. That's difficult for someone because they're not lashing out at you. They're just in such pain. They can't deal with the experience. And I know now that there are some people in that group of families who lost all those children now that we're into the one-year anniversary. They didn't want people coming to their town. They didn't want people coming to the school or to the grounds where the school was, or they dismantled it and they're going to rebuild it. They didn't want the outside world at all coming to them 1 year later. So that's tough. How would you respond to someone where they really are, they want to be left alone?
I think the Sandy Hook situation is unique in that it's so publicized that you have complete strangers coming to you, trying to give you assistance, sympathy, and it's very overwhelming. I think there's a big difference between my situation, where I had time to grieve ahead of time, where I had time to say goodbye in my own way and get used to the idea, and having a similar situation with you or them, and suddenly, and you don't have time to say goodbye. You don't have time to give that final kiss or hug. And that's just so much different, because the pain, it's still very intense, but it's just, it's hard to describe the difference. I think we had a unique opportunity where we could say the things that we need to say. And because we weren't public figures, it was just limited to our family and our friends and people who knew Eric. I was shocked at how many people actually knew Eric and showed up to his funeral. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. But I think their pain is, I think possibly, they're not sure who is actually sincere and who is using them as a jumping off point to something else for their own benefit.
Right.
So
right.
In that case, I can understand why she would be angry, because she doesn't, you know, we just don't know who's being sincere and who's not.
Right. And I think you said it very well at the beginning that, you know, it's an individual set of circumstances. Every family, everybody is going to respond very differently to this kind of loss. So
right.
You have to pay attention to the cues, and if a reaction comes across to you negatively, it's not about you. It's about
and don't
more
take
than
it personally.
You are. Don't take it personally unless you are insincere and you are trying to merchandise for your own benefits. But in most cases, you know, people they respond according to the pain and suffering that they are going through. And
right.
In your case, obviously, you had a lot more time to prepare. In my case, I had no time to prepare at all.
Right.
It just happened. And in the case of violence and those kind of things, they just happen. So, again, real quickly, give us one of the websites that we can go to purchase the book. And I would encourage you, I've had some of your cookies. They're delicious. I would encourage
Thank
you to support you. This wonderful business, books, and I'm sure there are going to be other projects. So give us one of the websites, Ken, Angela.
Okay, the website for the book is www.danceagain.info. Dance Again is one word, and info.com. And the website for the cookies is www.dojangles.com.
Great. Well, you are a joy and an inspiration to so many. I thank you so very much. I hope you sell tons of books. And just know that you are helping those who are still with us and helping those who can find some joy in their own lives because of what you have experienced, but your son's memory will always, always be alive because of the wonderful things you and your family are doing. Angela Brown Ware, thank you so much, and happy holidays to you. Merry Christmas.
Same to you. Merry Christmas. Same to you.
Bye-bye. Take care
Bye-bye.
Now. All right. Well, you know, you never know what's going to happen with your own set of circumstances. I wanted to do this show now because there are those who are in a quandary about, you know, what experiences they're going through. For some people, Christmas and the holiday seasons are dreadful because they have a lot of pain that they still have to deal with. I'm hoping that every single day during this holiday season will be a better day for you. Whatever you are experiencing, I hope that you will find joy and thanksgiving in your own lives. We all have something. If you live long enough, you will have something to deal with and cope with. But I know that every single day offers a new opportunity and a new challenge to be a better person, to be a better citizen, to be a respectful person, to reach out to those who need to be reached out to, and to certainly comfort those who are around you. So, Merry Christmas to you. Happy Kwanzaa. We'll be on the air next Thursday. It'll be Three Kings Day and then New Year's Day, and poof, we'll be in 2014. But I hope that every single day will be a new day of joy and thanksgiving in your life. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Spread the word, and we'll see you next week. Merry Christmas.